Please keep in mind, the views expressed on the Thin Men podcast reflect those of the hosts and the hosts alone. They are not necessarily representative of the Myrna Loy Center or its staff. Thank you.
Welcome to the Thin Men. I'm Biggs.
I'm Zach.
This is Brandon filling in tonight.
Who are you filling in for, Brandon?
For Brandon.
Oh, nice.
Brandonception.
Part-time Thin Man. So tonight we are going to cover the movies Red Army.
Yeah.
Which you will be able to see tonight and tomorrow. And that's it. If you're in Helena, so hurry up and get to the theater if you're that's listening. Right. Don't even finish the podcast. Just get online and order the ticket now.
Do your due diligence.
And we're also covering the movie...
Cut Bank.
Yeah, that's the one. Which takes place in Montana, but it's got super big celebrities, so you'd never know.
That's right. They're far too pretty to be in our state.
That's right. So without further delay, let's begin.
Time is running out to catch Red Army.
It is great.
So great.
And I just want to put out a quick apology. We had a Q&A at the Loy for this movie, and I tried to record it all to put up on the podcast last week, and something screwed up, and I lost everything.
It's the future, man.
Yeah.
That's the battle we fight.
Yeah, so there was some great stuff about Arvydas Sabonis.
Yeah.
Very little to do with this movie, but I enjoyed it anyway. So thank you for all the Carol professors and everybody who came up and talked. Zach dropped some knowledge on us Soviet athletes, stuff that wasn't covered in this film. But there is a lot covered in this
film. They cover a lot of ground in 85 minutes. It's a breezy film, but they pack a ton in there.
So this movie is from the perspective of the Soviets who won a couple of Olympics and
a crap load of Olympics.
Yeah. They lost right before the Miracle on Ice, right? Wait, was the Miracle on Ice the game against them?
That's the game against them, yes.
So it wasn't for the gold medal, but it was right on the way to it.
It was
right?
A semifinal.
It's a round robin. They were using a round robin system at the time. And so it was one of those things where if the Soviets had won, they would have won gold. But if they lost, they had to go play a different game for a medal and so on and so forth. It was a really complex seeding and point-based system. Unnecessarily difficult.
Yeah, there was Olympic sports back then. Pretty much. But so I know ESPN did a documentary on this, and I have not watched it because I didn't want to watch it and get it mixed up with this documentary.
I did watch it. It's a lesser version of, you can tell that so the ESPN one, they found out that this film Red Army was being made, and so they rushed theirs into production and did all their interviews with the Soviet players after the Red Army crew had done their interviews. So you can see them like, why are these Americans not leaving us alone about this, like visibly agitated in the ESPN one, whereas they come off they're a lot more relaxed in the interviews in this film.
Yeah, it's really fun. Who was the main guy?
Slava Fetisov, who was one of the longest tenured players on the Red Army team and served as their captain. He was a defenseman,
and he's now the minister of sport in Russia. Right now, this guy, it's really funny the way they show him at the beginning of the documentary, because they show him as he is and they're trying to record, and he just like holds his finger up and he's just like
talking on his phone.
Yep, just not even talking, he's just looking at something on his phone and could care less about the interview. Clearly doesn't want to be in the interview.
Well, this is a great thing I learned. So one of the producers of the film is a guy named Liam Satchery Malloy, who's from Helena, and he actually came down when we premiered it. It was a lot of fun. He's a really great guy. But he was talking about how Slava Fetisov had originally only agreed to a 15-minute interview for the film, and once they got him talking, he enjoyed talking to Gabe Polsky, the director, so much that they ended up talking for over 7.5 hours.
Which they even showed a point where they're trying to break down, you know, all the lighting and everything.
Yeah.
And he's still talking and he's kind of annoyed at the people around him. And this guy is like, it's so great following him for this documentary, because there's other people they talk to, but he's the main one. And it's really funny because he's so flat. And I can't tell if he's doing it to be funny or if it's just if he's just naturally funny.
He has a great dry sense of humor.
It's really funny. Yeah. Like, it's really funny watching him, and he's so rude and flat with everything, but it's pretty great.
Yeah.
And so they talk about how the Soviets, you know, that they basically grew up together mm-hmm. playing hockey together, like literally grew up together when they were
like
kids.
In military style barracks.
Yeah. And their original coach kind of taught them to play together and taught them dance.
So
and
yeah, Anatoly Tarasov was the original coach. And he, so at the time when he became the coach of the Soviet hockey program, there was no Soviet hockey program. So he sort of invented the Russian style of hockey from scratch, and it was very fluid and graceful. And creative, and it became sort of the bedrock for the style they would go on to be so successful with. And it was an extension of Tarasov's personality. He's this very warm, kind, loving man, and he believed like a team could only be successful if they loved each other. And eventually he was replaced by Viktor Tikhonov, who was the total opposite of that.
Yeah, this guy was cruel. Like, he kind of looked at them all as animals.
Yeah, he believed that there should be no love in a team, that the only thing they should be bonded by is their hate for the coach.
Yeah, there's one guy, and I think this is in the trailer, but his father died, and so they just had practice scheduled that day. I don't think they even had anything important coming up soon, and he just wanted to go to his father's funeral, and he wouldn't let him. I mean, this is the kind of caliber person.
Yeah, they basically would get 2 weeks off around Christmas, and that's about it. Like, that was it.
So it covers, you know, the Miracle on Ice a little bit, although there's not a lot that they say about that. They clearly say that for the end of the interview.
Yeah, the Miracle on Ice is also very much a footnote to the larger story.
Yeah, they largely tell that through clips, which mm-hmm. I thought was really clever the way that they did it. But you get to know these people, you get to know other parts of the story that most people don't know, because you just see the Kurt Russell movie and you sort of stop at that, or you remember the game if you're older, but mm-hmm. like, you don't necessarily remember how dominant the Russians were. And so we get to follow on through these Olympics and all the things that they're going, and more importantly, I think, to the story is when they started dropping into the NHL.
Yeah, absolutely,
because it's really when Russia is changing rapidly.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're kind of finding their way in the world and like trying to get out of Russia or trying to stay and yet figure out a way to get paid. You know, like none of them want to be treated like they're being treated. And so it's really interesting their paths to sort of get out. And one by one, they drop into the NHL. Mm-hmm. At least the starting five do, right?
Yeah. It actually starts with a player who wasn't a member of the famous Russian Five, Alexander McGillney, who defected during a European tournament. And then it starts picking up from there. Once the defections start, the Soviets realize that they aren't going to be able to stop these players from leaving. And so they start offering them, okay, we will allow you to leave, but you'll only get 10% of your salary and you'll pay the rest back to the country.
Yeah, which our protagonist has an interesting way of getting around that, because he's just... He is, when the unstoppable force goes to move him, he ain't moving.
He will not budge.
He is the immovable object in this movie.
Absolutely.
But it's interesting because they go into the NHL one by one, and then they just don't play very well in the NHL.
Yeah.
Because apparently NHL hockey is more about individual players making plays. It's not about teamwork to the extent that the Russians were, or at least at this time.
The North American style of hockey is very much a north-south game. Like, it's, you have your guys in their spots and they go up and down their spots, and you sort of pass back and forth as they go up and down their lane. And the Soviets play a style where they would switch with each other constantly and be weaving in and out and dropping passes backwards. And like, if they can't break into the zone, then they'll circle around and do it again, instead of just the constant back forth grinding style the North Americans played.
Yeah, so eventually they all wind up on a team together.
Yeah, Scotty Bowman gets five of the Russians. Scotty Bowman, the legendary hockey coach and executive who was coaching the Red Wings at the time, and he reunites the Russian Five, although an altered version of the Russian Five. It's not the famous group from the Soviets. It's two of them and then three other players from the Soviet team who had sort of come, who were a little younger and had come up over the years.
And that's where we're going to leave it.
Yeah.
Because even though it's history, I know people are lazy and you'd rather go watch it on a big screen tonight or tomorrow than look look it up on Wikipedia.
That's right.
So I dare you to go to this movie and enjoy it.
And you will.
Because it is an enjoyable documentary.
It's great from a character perspective. It's great from like an exciting sports action perspective. And it's great from a socio-political perspective where you really are seeing a side of this famous to American conflict. That's a side that's not, that we don't see, that we never got to see.
And by the way, I do want to say something. So I was debating whether I wanted to take my 13-year-old to this movie, and I just wasn't sure because I wasn't sure how politics heavy it was. When I watch this, I think that this is a really great way to break in, you know, what the Soviet Union was to somebody who's younger who may not understand. I mean, I would say at least 11 and up,
absolutely,
I think could totally, because
it gets them through a window of something that they can understand, even if they're not a sports fan. Like, you can get the idea of like a national sports program and sort of expand out from there. It allows you to ease into it.
Yeah, my mom has watched as much hockey as I have, which is almost none. And she loved this movie. Like, when I came back talking about it, she'd already seen it like weeks early. So she really enjoyed it too. And I mean, she's not a hockey fan at all. So you don't have to be a sports fan. You don't have to be a history buff. It's a really compelling story.
Yeah, you have to be someone who likes interesting characters and interesting stories. And if you like those two things and you like the documentary form, you will like this movie.
Yeah, I think if you like documentaries, there's no reason why you wouldn't love this.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I would put it on the same tier as like the new Scientology movie.
Yeah.
I would put it on the same tier as King of Kong. Like,
me too.
It's up there.
Absolutely.
It's a great documentary. So.
Yeah. I wish this had been the 30 for 30, because man, is it great.
Yeah. So check it out tonight or tomorrow.
Stealing, stealing, pretty mama, don't you tell on me. I'm stealing back to my same old use.
All right, Cut Bank, what do we want to say about this movie?
Start off maybe with just the basic info. Directed by Matt Shakman, who is best known for working on a crap load of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia episodes, but doing a ton of stuff on TV. Directed episodes of 6 Feet Under, directed episodes of Fargo, and many, many other shows.
And for a movie that's set in Montana, a lot of big celebrities. A
lot of big stars. You've got Billy Bob Thornton. You've got John Malkovich. You've got Bruce Dern.
John Cusack puppeting John Malkovich off of the screen. No, I'm kidding. It's Catherine Keener.
That's right. You've got Michael Stuhlbarg. You've got Oliver Platt. You've got Liam Hemsworth and Teresa Palmer rounding out the cast.
I got to back up for a second. Does Oliver Platt count as a celebrity?
Counts as a celebrity to me.
In my book, yeah.
Okay, I'm just checking.
I was really excited when I saw him on screen. So
I can't get excited now that I've seen him in so many shows. I'm just like, Oliver Platt is like...
He works. That dude works.
Yeah, he does work. Yeah, but he's not... Remember when he used to like have gravitas? Like he had that kind of air about him, like... Wow, Oliver Platt, like, he's one of the better actors out there. And now it's just like, there's Oliver Platt being fat.
I still feel that way. I still feel strongly about Oliver Platt.
Well, that's because you didn't sit through 4 seasons of The Big C.
That's probably true, yeah. By probably, I mean 100% true. I did not sit through a single season of The Big C.
But Oliver pulls his A game of I'm super fat, but still pulling a paycheck in this movie. And he does exactly what he needs to do.
He does everything the script asks of him.
He does pretty much what he always does now, which is like he's kind of thoughtless and he's fat. Like, I don't know what else to say about him. But he's not a big part of this movie.
Yeah, he was.
Well, he
filled a lot of that screen up.
Hey, we're fat, so we're hitting our own trip, okay? The thin man was always meant to be ironic.
That's right. It is not a genuine description.
That is why I'm literally puffing out my gut in the cover photo.
That's why you can hear my jowls rattling through the microphone.
Which is exactly what Oliver Platt sounds like. Like, just picture a lot of, how's it going, guys?
Oh, yeah, that's a homie who gets winded.
He gets winded eating. How do you do that?
Yeah, that steak was tough.
All right.
So this has turned into the take shots at Oliver Platt hour.
Well, I... Okay, so... Okay, so essentially, is it... Which Hemsworth do we get in this
Liam.
Movie?
Liam.
Liam, okay. I get their names mixed up, even though they don't look or act anything alike. We get the Hunger Games Hemsworth.
That's right. We get the Miley Cyrus dating Hemsworth.
And so essentially, he's trying to pull a scam.
Yeah.
Which you find out pretty quick in the movie. You're only surprised if you're 10 minutes through it.
Yeah, I walked in on 15 minutes.
Oh, really? So you didn't even know it's supposed to be a surprise.
I mean, they do reveal the person who you think is dead isn't in the trailer, so.
So essentially, he is filming a murder, which is not actually a murder,
yes,
of Bruce Dern. And we only tell you this because, like I said, they spell it out very quickly in the plot. You just have to know right away or the plot falls apart.
Yeah, it makes no sense otherwise.
If you don't understand that the guy is still alive who gets killed in the video, you just don't get anything about this movie.
Yes.
And so he's filming his girlfriend.
In the canola fields.
Right. And he gets popped. And so this is all basically a plot to get money from the post office general, played by a rotund Oliver Platt, who comes to cut him a check later. Along the way, there's a lot of misadventures.
Yes. You meet the crazy characters of small town Montana.
Yeah, but this is, like, make no mistake, this is probably nothing like a Pink Montana.
It's not.
Whatsoever.
It's nothing at all. Like
it's not even filmed there. So
for one thing, I'd say everybody's quite white.
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
Isn't it very Native American around there?
Yeah.
So we only have one Native American character.
And there is no one in Montana with the bone structure of Liam Hemsworth. There just isn't.
And I can't help but compare this to Fargo. Like, it didn't help that Brandon literally told me that it's like Fargo before I went to see it. But there's so much stuff that's like Fargo. Like,
yeah, it's very Coen inspired.
Yeah, if you replace the Russian with... I guess the Indian, if you just want to put it that way, like it'd be an apt description, although much smaller part than in Fargo.
Mm-hmm.
And he essentially plays a guy who has a job to do and doesn't do it. Right? Which seems to be what everybody does in this movie.
Uh-huh.
They have a job, they screw it up, and a psychopathic killer.
In a lot of ways, this is a movie about failure.
Yeah. Yeah, it pretty much is. But really, when you get to the nuts and bolts of this movie, it's this guy wants to get out of a small town with his girlfriend. Now, something interesting about this movie is watching how the girlfriend reacts to everything, because she plays a beauty queen of this super small town.
Mm-hmm.
And it is spot on. Take it from somebody who dated a Miss Teen USA entry when I was in high school. That's my other connection to this movie. Guess what the other one is, Zach?
I'd love to hear. Please tell
me. I'm fat like Oliver. No, Anna from Montana. So there's three ways that I connect to this movie. But it's really interesting because you kind of get the impression like she's going to peak at being... the teen beauty queen.
Yeah, she is a classic big fish in a small pond who is maybe not in the best situation to try to become a big fish in a big pond. She doesn't really have, like, she sort of has hit the limit of where being pretty is going to take her.
And this is very much mirrored by the previous winner, who's probably in her 40s.
Yeah, something like that.
It's hard to say because she obviously drinks hard.
Yes, there's some hard living in this movie.
Bartending, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, so you kind of see what she's going to become if they don't get out of the town,
mm-hmm.
which I found, I really like that. Like, because she's not a huge character. Like, she's important to the plot, but not super important. Like, you could pull her out.
Yeah.
But it does show you the consequences of what's going to happen if he doesn't pull off this whole thing, which I found kind of interesting. It's not the kind of details that most movies would actually go into.
It gives it stakes in a personal way, which is nice to see.
Now, we haven't even talked about the real antagonist of this movie. What's this actor's name?
Dulbarg, who's actually starred in a Coen Brothers film, A Serious Man.
Oh, I haven't seen that for a long time.
Uh-huh.
Also, Billy Bob Thornton is in this, who's
in Fargo.
In the Fargo show.
Yes, directed by Matt Shakman. Wow. Coincidence? I think not.
No, I don't think so. And Billy Bob Thornton's a real jerk in this.
There was one thing that I saw in this movie that I really had a difficult time with, is the Native American who first shoots the, allegedly shoots the mailman, is in on the scam. the sheriff, played by John Malkovich, is going up to his house. And so Liam Hemsworth calls him on his phone. He is a complete mute. He actually writes notes to people, but he has a telephone, like a landline telephone. What possibly good is this telephone to this person?
And he communicates just with the beeps from the buttons, the nine different pitches you get to play with.
That's pretty good, actually.
I'm great at no prizes.
Yeah, I can't argue with that, because that's pretty good.
That's better than anything I could have come up with.
Yeah, that's the best excuse I got.
Dude, right off the top of your head, you were fast with that one. Yeah, I don't know. How much more do we want to get into this? I mean, it's
hard with mystery, with films that sort of have mystery as the base. It's hard to talk about them in a way where you can get into it without giving it away. You sort of have to sacrifice one or the other.
I will say that the psychotic person who winds up going to get his parcel, because what this really hinges on is that when the mailman allegedly dies,
it really throws a wrench into things in the town.
Yeah, because he wants his parcel.
He wants it so badly,
and he does some straight up murdering to get his parcel. He's crazy.
He is absolutely terrifying on screen.
Legitimately scary.
And it's fun. It's fun crazy. Like, it's Buffalo it's always Bob kind of crazy.
It's the kind... Here's the other thing I like about the performance. It's rare where you see a character who so clearly could not kick anyone's ass in, like, an actual fight, who's also, legitimately terrifying. Yeah. Like, who isn't physically imposing in any way, but is just creepy. It's sort of like it comes from that same mold as the Hannibal Lecter mold. Like, the old guy who's not really a physical threat, but is also totally a physical threat
that will do anything to get a physical threat.
He needs to get his parcel.
I want to go back to what I was kind of hitting on earlier, but talk about the end of this movie without really giving away anything. So they have a scene where some characters are leaving town. I won't say who. And there's these kids that ride up to follow them. Did you notice what the kids did?
Mm-mm.
This is what I really love about this movie. The symbolism of this. It's great. No, it really is. So these kids ride their bikes and they're following this car out of town. And then they hit the
city limits?
Yeah. They hit the city limits and they stop. And they just stop. And that's the end of the movie. I thought that was great. Like, what a great metaphor for what happens in that town. And you see this reverberated through actions of Billy Bob Thornton and John Malkovich. You see it through, you know, the couple we were talking about earlier. Mm-hmm. Like, you really see it through the psychotic character. He has reasons for the way he turned out to be.
Mm-hmm.
And like, once he hit that point, he just stopped and there was no turning back. Like, everybody in this movie has just, like, stopped and they're basically running in place at this point.
Yeah. It's sort of a weird, societal town, small town version of Arrested Development where you run out of space to grow and you just are what you are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't know any other way to really sum up this movie other than it's a lot of characters in limited space who do some things, but they just can't grow because they're stuck in the space of their town. I don't know any other way to wrap
it up. It's a lot
movie.
Like those fishes you see where, like, if you have a fish in a bowl, it will only grow to a certain size to fit the bowl. But once you take it out, it'll start to grow larger and larger and larger. That's basically a metaphor for what's happening in the film. Thank you for joining us on our cinematic recap adventure. If you'd like to see Cut Bank, it is now playing at the Myrna Loy Center. In terms of live performance, we soon will have George Winston playing in May 24th. Tickets will go on sale April 30th. And I believe Biggs wanted to tell you about the other thing playing.
Well, we got a little film called Red Army, which is playing tonight and tomorrow. So please check it out. I can't speak highly enough of this movie, and these movies really need support, you know. So when they're really good, please go check them out. And this is two great movies that you can see right now.
Support independent cinema.
Yeah. Tonight and tomorrow. Stay listening. Not safe for network.
So when you get the actual script in your hands, how is it that you memorize everything?
I mean, there's like, you write the first letter of each word.
That's what Robert Downey Jr. does.
Sure, yeah. And that's great for Robert Downey Jr., but
for Robert Downey Jr.
That just gets me so confused.
RDJ.
So RDJ. We won't be seeing you in an Iron Man suit anytime soon.
Well, not on stage. No. In my off time, maybe. But I don't know what you're doing in my bedroom, so please leave.
That's debatable.
I think the way we argue matters. The more diverse populations we have to argue with, the better. The internet, it gives you a lot of zealotry, and a lot of that insane, you know, 9/11 was an inside job, or the moon landing never happened, or whatever. But, you know, if we could look at the flip side of that, too, you get a whole bunch of information that gets to fly around the world in a heartbeat, and all of a sudden everybody knows the same damn thing.
We had a good life.
Is talking about the Juggalo community mm-hmm. on the podcast so publicly as we do,
yeah.
does that set us up as a target in mm-hmm. the future, potentially?
It's as much of a threat as a dirty 400-pound topless woman like running at you from a couple hundred yards away can be. You know what I mean?
This is family over
it's
here.
Family.
Box office battle.
If you were to take the male lead of your film and put him into a romantic comedy, would I root for him?
I have to say, we have seen this romantic comedy. Liv Tyler is his daughter, and he saves the human race in Armageddon.
Is that a romantic comedy, though?
You know, you had me until you said Armageddon.
Shooting the show.
My parents always stocked up on ramen. They didn't really know how much I ate. And I would actually scrounge up change and go to the store and buy more ramen so it didn't look like I ate as much.
Eric.
That's what alcoholics do. My mom should have never taught me how to make it.
Yeah, you had a problem.
The Alien Movie Project.
The aliens crash a kid's birthday party, basically.
Which, again... I think supports the frat aliens notion. Oh god, where am I? Oh guys, hey, is there anything to drink at this party? You guys,
I'm gonna have some of this cake.
Hey,
you guys mind if I cut this cake?
Can I open this? Are you gonna wear that hat?
I'm just gonna take some of this cake.
Montauk Skies.
By the way, his character trait is he constantly pulls out stomach acid pills. What do you call it? Like Pepto-Bismol or something? And he just constantly chews the pills every time something comes wrong. He's like, argh.
Yeah.
Just chewing the pain.
Can I just say I appreciate...
washes them down with a cup of coffee.
I appreciate the subtlety used by saying his character trait, because we know this is the type of movie where each character gets one trait.
Find all our podcasts on iTunes. Not safe for network.